Somebody has to transcribe it.
We do. Yeah, I've been transcribing for 10 hours.
Oh,
so far, I'm not done. I interviewed Judge Nocturnal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's
so
not done.
Okay, I'll try and be precise and to the point.
Well, to get started, our research topic is we're analyzing the changes in trends and crime from 1980 to the present. So what is your relationship to that question?
Well, I started in law enforcement here in Hillsborough in 1977. So, I started just a little before you're looking at your trends. And through that time period, I started as a patrol officer, worked as a dog master, worked in investigations, worked in property evidence, worked undercover, supervised a countywide narcotics team, worked in administration. So, kind of had my foot in every aspect of law enforcement.
Right.
So that's what it's been.
Okay. So can you tell me a little bit in depth about maybe your involvement as a woman in law enforcement and how it's been different for you over the last 5 years?
Well, obviously, when I got into law enforcement, there weren't very many women in law enforcement. That was still very, very new. And I remember when I applied, and there were a couple positions available, and all these guys had applied naturally, and 3 women applied. I remember thinking at the time, they're probably thinking, what are these women doing? I mean, can I make this really in law enforcement? And I remember thinking that, and thinking, how far am I going to get based on that? Now, I mean, it's commonplace for women to be in law enforcement, and we look for how we get more women in law enforcement, because it's the person that can do the job, not the gender. So there's been a big shift in who should be a patrol officer or an officer. Stature doesn't matter if you're a big person or a little person. You can be trained in defensive tactics if that's what you need. But one of the trends that I think that we've certainly seen over that 25 years is initially, in the early years, probably more brute force was used than talking to people. Where now we're much more concerned about talking to people, using mediation skills, solving the problem at the time verbally versus with brute strength. So that's one of the things that I think has certainly changed over the years. We're much more effective at what we do. One of the other things, I mean, we used to go to bar fights every single weekend. I mean, that was a commonplace thing. Gosh, we would swing shift, we'd come in, we'd be in writing our reports, and all of a sudden over the radio, oh, there's a bar fight. And we would all, like, bail out. Sometimes it was close, we'd just run down the street to it. And now, it's a rare occasion that we go to a bar fight. So it's just kind of interesting, some of the things that change. Child abuse, domestic violence, that occurred, but the public awareness wasn't there, so you didn't hear about it as much. I don't think that it occurs probably any more now than it used to. I think what we have, though, is that public awareness campaign. It's just like drunk driving. It used to be acceptable to do that. Basically, I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal, where now it's a huge deal. So some of those things have changed through public education, and I think that's really where our trends come from.
So do you think the crime that we see maybe emerging in statistics now is because it's more looked for than maybe it was in the past, or do you think there's a change?
I think it goes back to the public education. I think that the more that people become aware of it, educated, and it becomes safe to report it, and they find out something's going to be done, and that they're not going to be chastised for it, that yes, it's, and I use the Catholic, the priest as an example. I mean, I think, you know, the sexual abuse, that's gone on for a long time. It just recently became safe to be able to bring it out and to talk about it and to do something about it. So I think that's truly where a lot of the increase if you will, where crime comes from. It's just increasing reporting, not in occurring.
Well, how do you think the nature of crime has changed? So as far as different types of increase, maybe one that's not so much
Well, you know, one of the things I looked at the trend of drugs. I mean, back, you know, in the early years, marijuana was what was commonplace. Mm-hmm. And now we see a lot more variety in the different types of drugs. So, and like the relationship to identity theft, where, I mean, counterfeit money. I mean, now equipment is more advanced. We have computers. I mean, there's so much, there are so many more things out there to make our life easier on a positive front, and as well as on the criminal front, it makes things easier. I mean, now you can go to a good printer and counterfeit money, mm-hmm. and the average person can't tell. So it's interesting as we progress more as a society. I mean, thinking that this country's only, you know, a few hundred years old. We are so young when we look at in our country in relationship to other countries in the world and what's happened. So, and here with the technology advances that we've seen, it's pretty amazing to see how, like, crime has kept up with that, so to speak. Like I say, when you look at, I mean, counterfeiting, the identity theft, all of those type things, the criminal things people have access to now, where they didn't used to have that. So like I say, I think as we progress with technology, then the crime rate keeps up with it in its own
yeah.
fashion.
Mm-hmm. going back to women in law school tonight, what particular challenges have women faced?
I think traditionally, whoever, male or female, you've always had to prove yourself. But I think with women in the early years, it was you had to do so a little more so because you were female. I mean, they expected the guys could walk in and do it, but still they wanted to see you in that first fight and see how you could handle it yourself. Do I really want you to back me up? Are you going to be able to handle this situation? So I think there's a certain amount of that, and I think probably still to this day, you want to know if that person next to you is going to be able to back you up and give you the assistance you need, and I think that's just human nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's been interesting because over the years, I can remember there are times where being a female is an asset and times when it's not. And a lot just depends on the situation and who you're dealing with. But I've been in situations where you go on a call and it's like, well, I'll talk to her, but I don't want to talk to that guy. I only want to talk to you. Fine, no problem. I mean, you can work that out.
Mm-hmm.
There have been other times where I want to talk to her. Like I say, a lot depends on the situation, but that's where having both male and female is a benefit, because you both show up on a scene, instead of getting, I'm not talking to you guys, get out of here, if you have a male and a female, they're willing to talk to the female, then you get the job accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I say, human nature coming into it makes it kind of interesting. Sometimes it works, like I say, to your advantage, and other times not. So. But the bottom line is being able to talk to people and get the job accomplished. You know, so you get some forms of discrimination from outside the workplace. Then inside, I mean, early on, yes, the human nature being what it was, you know, some of the guys felt protective. I mean, they didn't want you to go to a fight because they felt like, oh, I have to deal with a fight as well as I've got to protect you because you're a female. But a lot of those have changed over the years. As we get more women in law enforcement, we show that we're capable of doing the job, and it becomes a non-issue. So it's just one of those things that it takes time to change it, and it takes the integration to make it happen. Hmm.
I'm curious, we see, you know, the
No, that's totally assigned by district. I mean, they don't know if it's a male or a female that's working that district. I mean, they may know, but it doesn't make any difference. Like, calls are assigned by the area you're working, mm-hmm. not by the people who are out there. So it really doesn't, and the bottom line is, male or female, though, if you need cover, we can send cover, or if you request cover, we're going to send cover. So that part, it really doesn't matter. It's whoever gets the call and whoever's there. You know, they're about to handle it. So, and you do that however you can. And sometimes you might need help, and other times you might not. So it's just going to depend what it is.
So do you believe that women have
Not yet. I think that when we're truly at a 50-50 ratio, then I think that we will. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of traditional values in law enforcement. There's still a lot of men that question women being in law enforcement. So I think, like I say, it's a transition. I mean, gosh, when I started, I was one of two women on the force. You know, now we're up to 20%, and we've got a lot more females. So that's just going to take some time, and probably a generation or two for us to get there.
Do you do anything special, like that?
It's both. I mean, we go out and actively recruit, and we recruit women as well as other minorities. And we've got a pretty broad spectrum here, which is great because, I mean, at different times there's different needs for different people, so it works out really well. But we go out, and I mean, if I know of other women who are laterals in other agencies that I can recruit, I'm not past going after somebody, some other agency if they've got a good male or female. So, like I say, we definitely, though, do give preference to minorities in that, not an unfair preference, but we see the value. And so if you had, people who were equal, but one is minority status, and there's benefit that we would take from. To a certain degree, yes. I mean, traditionally it was all white males that were hired, and now we're saying, no, we're not going to hire all white males. It's a little more difficult. Yes, it is. I think that's where it behooves them to try a little harder to do things that make them have an advantage. Mm-hmm. To be better. So I think that's a true statement. It has made it more difficult. Certainly not impossible because we're still predominantly male, but like I said, I think then they can go after things that are of a benefit that we look for to make themselves, be enhanced. So.
Yeah, it sounds like it would make it a stronger group because then they can improve themselves.
Right. Because in the early years, I mean, it would be unusual for somebody to have a degree in criminal justice. I mean, a lot of people were hired right out of the military service, and they didn't have a lot of education, that type of thing. Well, now we see a lot more people with military service, with the education, bachelor's degrees. So that trend has changed as well. People understand it's a more professional job than it used to be, and you have to be educated and prepared for it.
Okay. Are there any goals that you might have were in cases for people struggling in the profession of learning that stand out to you or have it been to you?
I think my answer is, I want to say that I think that it's been pretty normal. But I say that with some reservation. I think that probably has to do with one of the personality. I'm so ingrained in working in an all-male-dominated workforce that I've figured out how to do that. And when I go back and think of times where maybe some people take some things for granted or perceive things one way. Yes, when I, just after I graduated with the dog, we had an armed robbery call, and there were two of us. There was my lieutenant who had trained and had his dog, and I have a call without any shoals, and there was a situation where there's an armed felon out of California came up, and they went to a car dealership, and they kidnapped the driver, and they took the car, and they ended up dumping him off, and they went down to Kansas City, and they robbed the bank, and they took off, and so they dumped the car, and it was out of shoals, and took off on foot. Well, we had the FBI out there, it was a bank robbery, we had the state police out there, we had Washington County sheriffs out there, and then they called postmen. So both my lieutenant with his dog and they took off to go out and help. Well, the lieutenant, naturally, because he's the lieutenant, he starts his dog first, doesn't give me the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the first thing. I mean, why are you first? But so we all kind of take off and we go about a half mile, and the lieutenant finally says, well, why don't you go back and start Buck and see what happens? We always have cover with you when you're working a dog. So one of the OSP officers started back with me. Well, we got about halfway back, and this is a hot day of July 17th. It's pretty hot out. It's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And he gets about halfway back and says, well, I'll just wait here for you. And I turn around and look at him and says, I don't know that I'm going to be coming this direction. I mean, they're going that way. I don't know that. Well, I'll just wait here for you. All right, fine. I mean, I'm going back, get my dog, and sure enough, we get out. And we take off and we go right down the Evergreen in the road. And so we're like, you know, two opposite directions. I have no cover. And get down there and sure enough, geez, good boy, Buck, what do we got here? A bag of clothes. Well, this is pretty amazing. Uh-huh. We must be right on track. So we go a little bit farther and pretty soon come around this big old dead tree. And here's these two guys. I mean, we track right through them just like that. Well, I'm probably shocked as anybody at that point. And Buck's sure looking at him, and thank God he was a long-haired shepherd of this big mane, so he looked really big. And pointed my gun at these two guys, and it's like, better do as I say. And my thought at the time was, you know, they're probably looking back saying, gosh, a woman with a gun would better do what she said. But anyway, I couldn't get out of my radio. So I was down there alone with these two guys, couldn't get cover. Thought about firing a warning shot, and I thought, oh, there's 40 cops out here. I'll probably get shot what would ensue.
Yeah.
And so walked him up to the field and had him there, and one of the county deputies looked over and could see that I had him. So she's got him! Jeez, all these people go zooming in! And so we went back, and they had buried their guns. Because they were ex-felons, and they were caught with them, but they were just different sentences, and they buried the money. And we went back and did an article search on both guns, and it was really amazing. But just kind of, people were, I think, kind of shocked that, you know, this old female out there with the dog catches these guys all by myself. I mean, just the way things happen. So I think things would probably happen a little differently now.
Mm-hmm.
We are just now training our first female dog master, since me, and she just sent me an email last week, and she got recruited last year, and I'm just so excited for her. I know what it's like, and I mean, it just, it's really neat. So, so like I say, I think she'll probably be treated a little bit differently. I mean, I would hope that if, you know, she were to go with her sergeant, he would have her start first instead of, you know, taking that opportunity. So.
Well, so can you tell us a little bit about what is a dog master?
What Hillsborough, gosh, we started our program back in 1978, and I think we had probably about the second canine program in the state at that time. We have an extensive training program where, and we pair up the officer with the dog, and we try and get a good personality fit. But our dogs are, we use all male German Shepherds, very friendly, because we use it for searching for lost children as well. We're giving the tools to do demonstrations. So they're very friendly, happy dogs, not aggressive, not mean. We train them to watch, and we train them to go after and take somebody, either on command or if there's a gunshot. That's the only two times the dog will do a take. Other than that, they're harassing delay, so they just bark when they find somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So you go through through a program, and you start with, like, out in the woods where there's lots of scent left. So you send a quarry out, they go out and tell them about how far to go and how many turns to make, and then you take your dog, and as a dog master, you're going to be watching your dog, and depending on where your dog behaves, you know, if they're on the track or not, they're getting close, they start casting. When they get to the end of a track, a lot of times, you know, with the scent, they stick their nose up and they're smelling, well, you know that you're very close, because dogs just have such an incredible nose.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, after you, and then you basically go from long grass down to shorter and shorter grass and then to hard surface. And it's dogs are tools. They're just like anything else that we carry on our belt. Be it a taser, your weapon, or a nightstick, and a dog and a tool, just like any of those other things. You kind of think of it as, we have this tool chest to do our job, and what are all the options that you have? A dog is certainly one of those. So it's great fun because you get all the hot calls. You get to chase bad guys. You get to catch bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty exciting. When I first started, there were only three of us in the state at that time. I traveled all over the state with my dog on dog calls. We caught a rapist out of California, or at Corvallis. We were down there and out in the woods and tracked that guy and died. And he elected to kind of jump in a big and bang, you know, and broke both of his legs. So he did. That was kind of deserving.
That's helpful.
So anyway, but there's a lot of opportunities. We've got the narcotics units, that work undercover. We've got the gang units that go out and work specifically the gangsters. We've got a fraud and identity theft unit. The investigation towards a variety of crimes, as well as the sex abuse, the child crimes, those types of things. And people always ask me, isn't it hard to work those cases? And it is. But I always had the attitude that I was doing something about the bad person. And that's what I think made it, you didn't just focus on what terrible things happened to the real victims, which are the little children. But the fact is, you're doing something about the bad thing. That's what's important. So,
I know a lot of my background,
cops are kind of known for their sick humor sometimes.
Exactly.
It's the same type of thing. Sometimes you have to make jokes about what you're doing. And it's not that you're insensitive to it, but you have to survive sometimes, because some of the things you see are pretty horrendous. So,
have you achieved
I'm not in a position to deal directly with that, but through the officers that work that, we now have gals that form their own gang, which is something that we've never had before. So there is an increase, and Victor Castro, he hasn't talked to him.
Somebody
talked to him.
Yeah.
Victor's an incredible officer, but an incredible resource, and certainly very, very knowledgeable about the games and that whole issue. I know that he's personally responsible for helping Dale run Dale out of the game, which is, that's a tribute to him, but certainly we are seeing an increase.
So I don't know if you have any info, but I'm curious, are we just as vicious as the other ones?
I think women can be a little more vicious than the men. I think it's, they want to have to prove themselves, and so they'll go like one up to show that, you know, they're bad actors and that they can do it. So I think in some ways that women tend to be a little bit worse than the guys at times.
I don't think I would have thought of a gang as, you know, being all women.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's just my own personal prejudices or if I
Well, I think some of it is because it's not what we've seen. I mean, traditionally, we see the male gangs, and that's all we care about. Well, now we're starting to see where some of the females are banding together doing the same thing. But because we haven't heard about it, we don't give it much thought.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think it's part of that education, even if it's negative education, so to speak, that it's kind of sad, but probably in a few years, guess what, when they say games, you're probably going to say, well, was it girls or dogs?
Yeah.
It's probably what will happen, because that's probably one of those trends that we're seeing that's just starting to come be in the forefront.
Have there been any changes in training?
Huge. Well, I mean, obviously we've always done firearms training. That's just a given. I mean, you carry a gun, you have to train with it. And we've always done defensive tactics training. Because obviously you get in a situation where you have to defend yourself or somebody else, and you want to make sure that you can do that with minimum amount of force that you can use. Other areas like mediation training, whoever heard of teaching cops to talk, so to speak? Everybody knows we have smart mouths, so we know what to say. But that's certainly one area. I mean, just in the last 15 years that the chief's been here, I mean, when he first started here, our training budget, and granted we were a lot smaller, was like $6,500. Now it's, you know, up over $80,000. So there's been a huge difference. We train virtually every Wednesday of the month, all year long. There's some type of training. Some of it's mandatory, some of it's voluntary, but there is so much to learn as a police officer that you have to keep repeating everything every year, like bloodborne pathogens, knowing and understanding about that. So we have defensive tactics, we have firearms. Now we've got tasers, we have to be trained in a taser, how to use it. We do scenario training as well. We have EVOC for driving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just a whole host of things that you need to continue to hone your skills on. So training is certainly something that 25 years ago, it was minimal. It was absolutely minimal. And now it's, like I said, there's so much that's mandatory that you have to do that. You just have to do it on a regular basis. We do what we call a lunacy training plan, where all of the officers are on a 4-10 schedule. So some work the first half of the week, some work the second half, but everybody works lunacy. Then what we do is we take half the department and they train one lunacy while the other half work. The following week, they flip-flop. So you repeat the training. So, and that's kind of how we do it throughout the year, so.
Is that what the
typically everybody gets the same training, unless, for instance, we've got a what we call a TSU, which is it's like TMT, which is a tactical team or SWAT, but you know, a little bit scaled down, not quite to the same level. So if you are in the SWAT team, you'll get more specialized training than you will otherwise. So there is some leaning towards some areas of specialty, but in general, overall, everybody is trained the same. Everybody kind of starts from the same basis, and then if they have a specialty, then they'll get a little more training here. Field training officers who are the officers that are coaches for the new officers we bring in. Once they're hired and they go down to the academy, when they come back, then they've got 17 additional weeks of being with three different coaches. So those people receive specialized training on how to be a good trainer. As cops, a lot of times we tend to be type A personalities. We want to reach out and do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. So as a trainer, you have to learn how to, okay, show them, talk to them, explain it to them, but then allow somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
So it takes a special type of person to be able to do that and to be a good trainer. So there's, like I say, depending what your area of specialty is, then you'll receive additional training for that.
Mm-hmm. How are the relations with the
Well, I think that Hillsborough Police Department has always had a good working relationship with our community. It's certainly better now than I think that it used to be. I think that we reach out more to the community. We attend community meetings. I don't know if you talked to Janae Saunders with Crime Prevention or somebody
mm-hmm.
else did, but
mm-hmm.
we have like crime prevention programs. We have Bertha Martel who does our volunteers, our Citizens Academy, the graffiti removal program. We have all these things where we reach out into the community. So instead of just going out and doing our job as cops, as law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
we reach out and want to touch the community and have them know us in a lot of other ways. For me personally, I've been on the board for the air show. I'm on the chamber board right now. I participate with Jackson Bottom and the Tree to Dreams. I participate with Quality Hospital and their annual dinner dance. So, we reach out and get to know the people in the community. It's nice to be able to have somebody call you who knows you to ask a question instead of having to go to a total stranger if it's something they're not sure about or they just don't know and they feel comfortable. So, it's good for us and it's good for our community to get to know us on a different level
mm-hmm.
other than just enforcing the laws. And we do that with the Hispanic community as well as with the Anglo community. So, it's all together.
So is that pretty much the same then since
1980? I would say that it started changing in the early 90s where we started reaching out more. In the 80s, we were still a small enough community that we didn't have to reach out as much as we do now. The community has grown so much now, as well as, and the police department has grown. We have to reach our fingers out into the community, into different areas. So just because of the growth, I think it's more important for us to reach out now, because it's not the little bedroom community that it used to be.
So how do you feel about community policing then? As your city is bigger, you can't always be involved in everything, so how do you feel about community policing?
Well, we still have to do community policing. I think that needs to be the basis for what we do. There's nothing more important than that relationship with your community. Well, they're not going to report the crime if they don't have the confidence that you're going to be able to do something about the problem. So continuing to work on those relationships on a variety of fronts is what we need to do. One of the things we've done here at Hillsborough is we've got a lot more civilian employees than we used to have. It used to be predominantly cops, and you had a few secretaries in the office, and that was all.
Mm-hmm.
We had a police officer doing our code enforcement. We don't do that anymore. We have civilians that do that. Like I said, Bertha does our volunteer coordination. Our crime prevention, civilian training, we have civilianized a lot of positions, and it saves money, number one, but it allows us to reach out into the community in different ways, and so we need to continue to do that. It's no more just law enforcement, it's about solving the problem, and that doesn't mean the end result is taking somebody to jail. So it's still, it's what we need to do. It's what's best for the community, it's best for us.
How has the police department then changed with the introduction of more civilian positions? I assume it's been able to grow,
mm-hmm.
But has it changed in any other ways?
Well, I think certainly growth just in sheer numbers of people, but in attitudes as well. And some attitudes I think are a little slower to change than others. Civilianizing some of these positions, I think, takes a while for people to understand the value of that. Kind of some of the old traditional attitudes about, you know, it can only be a foreign cop that can do it. Well, no, that's not true at all. I mean, the public safety specialists that we have in the field, but the code enforcement that take the lesser calls, it's, I mean, you ask any patrol officer and they absolutely love having them out there to help them. And so, like I say, part of it comes with the experience and learning the benefit versus not knowing if people being apprehensive because they're unaware. So, like I say, the growth is in the department alone and the city, the way the city's grown. I mean, it used to be, we had our little downtown core and that was considered Hillsborough. Now we have Sandsport and we have the whole east side of the city, which is totally different than what we used to experience. So,
I guess I can share some of the things that we were talking to police officers, how odd, you know, but do they still have all the same, you know, powers, or is it...
They don't carry a gun. They're not a certified police officer. We would not expect them to make an arrest in the field. Right. We don't want to put them in harm's way. That's why, like I said, on a traffic accident, they may be there to direct traffic, but not investigate the crash.
Mm-hmm.
Crime scenes. Doing security perimeter after the scene, you know, is secured and everything. I mean, they could be there to assist, but again, not putting them in harm's way. So, like I said, I mean, there's a huge benefit, and it's only been, you know, the last 10, 15 years that we've really started to civilianize and see the benefits of that. But it's, I mean, it's great. Those people just do an incredible job for us. Absolutely incredible.
I imagine it's just for people that
really
want to get involved,
so mm-hmm. And a lot of, like the PSSs, gosh, most of them have worked for us in other positions in the department, and then that opportunity becomes available, and they go for it, and you know, that looks like fun, I'm going to try something different. And that's one thing, nice, as large as we are, there are some opportunities to move around for different assignments,
mm-hmm.
And for me personally, I think that's one of the things where I never got bored, because I was always moving around. I did so many things. It seemed like every year or two I was doing something different. It was a new assignment or something changed. And so it made it exciting. And it, there were a lot of opportunities.
So
No, I think that's always a possibility, because they are, I can't think of a specific incident, but when you consider that they're in a uniform and they're driving a marked unit, people, it's not exactly like a police car, like they might drive a truck, but it says Hillsborough Police on it. It does have lights because they respond and they may have to block traffic. So there could be confusion where somebody could confuse them for a sworn officer. I'm not aware that that's ever happened.
We were reading the race police report, you know, seeing the situation with the chambers, and we saw strategic planning,
mm-hmm.
And kind of reorganizing the infrastructure of the actual police department. So maybe you could talk a little bit about how that has changed.
Well, we started strategic planning about 15 years ago, where we do it in a couple fashions. We do it both internally and externally. Where we'll meet together as a group, and then we'll reach out to the community and bring different factions of the community. I mean, we'll bring citizens, we'll bring people from the schools, we'll bring somebody from business. So you reach out into all of the Hispanic community and get together, and then we facilitate a process about, I mean, what are your expectations? What do you think the police department should look like? What should we be doing in our community? So it's not just our ideas, but it's hearing from the community. So we started that, and then every year we update that and see what changes we need to make, and are we doing things the way we want, kind of like the Hillsborough Vision 2020, the same type of a process that they've gone through with that, we started, and so, like I say, we just go back and every year update it and see, are we on track, are we looking at the trends, are we where we should be? And so that's how we move the police department forward. We do that on an annual basis. It's very effective. It's very effective. And like I say, getting the community to buy up, I mean, we passed our last levy by 70%. Mm-hmm. We're the only city in the state to pass it at that level. That says a lot for our relationship with our community, which is mm-hmm. very, very important.
Do you feel that it's beneficial to have this community?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As much as we might, but we know what's best for us. You don't know that until they confirm it. So you do, and plus, several brains are almost always better than one. There's certain times where you have to make a split-second decision, and you can only depend on yourself. But when you've got what we call discretionary time, what's better than getting a bunch of brains, smart people together to come up with ideas and brainstorm and come up with the best solution instead of just one solution? Because there's always, as they would say, there's more than one way to steer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's figure out, you know, what are our options? What's the best solution?
Well, are there any specific changes that you have made to the infrastructure that you are using to maintain the county? Do you adapt the department to put the community?
I think that we have. One of the things that we've done on a countywide basis is we now have interagency teams, which we didn't, you know, we had a few of those early on, but I mean, certainly now we've got the Westside narcotics team. We've got IDEAL, which is the game team. We've got the identity for fraud. We never used to have that, but now we've got a task force that deals with that as well. So I think, what we've seen is there are changes that we have to make in order to adapt to what is going on. And we've got there's a law enforcement council is a group that meets once a month. It's all the sheriff and all the chiefs in Washington County, and we meet once a month and kind of talk about things. That's where some of these ideas about having a task force idea. We've got the MAT detail, which is the traffic team. It's a multi-agency traffic team where one day out of the month, all the motor officers from all the agencies, they get together and they'll concentrate in one area. And it's publicized that they're going to be like in Hillsborough working on school bus violations. So look out. I mean, we tell people ahead of time. We don't try and surprise them. But then they'll all be here and that will be their focus in education. One of the others is wearing your seatbelts. I mean, now you're starting your clicker ticket. Yeah. Everywhere you go, doesn't matter what state you're in. I mean, that's the new kind of buzzword, but wearing seatbelts, I mean, the trend in that. Remember way back when we didn't used to wear seatbelts? Oh, yeah. You didn't even have them in the car.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, again, that's the trend. They save lives. So when we do our pedestrian or education campaigns, and that's what we do, we rarely cite people on those. We're there to educate. We pull them over, they get warnings, they get educated, those types of things. So those are type things that as the community becomes more aware, I mean, if we're having more crashes, okay, you have to reduce crashes, okay, then you've got to start wearing your seatbelts, and you've got to start paying attention to red lights and speeding in different areas, these types of things. So certainly, you look at a variety of things across the board, see what changes we can make. Be proactive.
Yeah, well, I've heard a lot from other people that I've done interviews about that keeps coming up. Do you think that's a problem in Hillsborough right now, or in the stores and the city?
No, it's a problem in Hillsborough right now. It's a huge problem in the state as well. It's so easy, and the problem with meth is the physical high that a person gets from it, it's just so overwhelming. It's I've been on it. I can't tell you. But what I can tell you is the high a person gets off of it is enough to turn a mother away from her child. I mean, to disregard caring for her child and that bond between a mother and a child can be set aside by the use of methamphetamine because of the physical reaction. So it's very serious. And I think the sad part is somebody thinks, oh, well, I can try it once.
Yeah.
And then they can't stop without help. And it's very difficult. But I think it's a very serious problem. And it's something that we need. The whole community has to come together to solve this problem. Again, this is something law enforcement can do on our own. Because we're after the fact with methamphetamine. And we're arresting people after they're high on it, after they've manufactured it, after they've sold it. We're after, you know, we got to get in front of it. And that's where the education comes in, where we need to be able to tell people, you know, this is going to mean a lot. It's going to learn it for, if not the rest of it, for a long time. So, but it is a serious process.
So how is
Well, I think one thing is we're certainly not doing public education. Gosh, I've been to 2 presentations here in the last 6 weeks out to different business groups where we're educating them about it and in relationship to the identity theft, because people may not see the meth, but they're getting hit by identity theft. Mm-hmm. Well, they go hand in hand. I mean, basically, you don't have one without the other. So educating them, and then, I mean, for us, we participate on the website, interagency narcotics team. We have both a sergeant and an officer assigned there. That's all they do, is just work those cases. We also have a street crimes unit here, which is a group that'll work. They'll work the neighborhood livability issues for us. I mean, right now we're having a graffiti problem. So with the graffiti problem, like I say, we've done something about that. But this group as well, I mean, if a neighbor calls, it's color dealing drugs, we've got people there all day, you know, all day, all night, that type of thing. Then this group will go over and work that. So, I mean, we're certainly very proactive towards working with issues when we know about it, when we come to our attention.
So
Well, identity theft is the largest. I think we have prostitution, where young females who can't afford to pay for it will sell their body for it. Robbery, people, theft, fencing material. I mean, you name it, a lot of it just comes back to meth. People will do it, you know, either to trade goods for the drugs, to sell them to a fence, to get money, to buy the drugs. Meth is pretty crippling when you look across the board at all the other crimes that people will commit just to get, you know, their money or the money for the drugs or to get the drugs. So,
What measures has the taken?
Oh goodness, that's kind of a big one. Certainly with Homeland Security, I mean, we participate with the FBI. We have somebody assigned to the Critical Decision Institute, which deals with Homeland Security, how to manage an incident if we were to have one, how to coordinate and work with our fellow agencies on it, and tabletop exercises. We've participated in numerous grants through Homeland Security for equipment, those types of things. It's something that you virtually do on a daily basis.
So are you part of the task force or the major important?
Right. He did, but no, I mean, there's, you know, certainly we still support that.
Okay. Well, I think you pretty much don't have anything to add. My paper, do you have anything else to look at?
I would just have to say that I think that this has been an incredible career. I don't look at being in law enforcement as a job, but something lifelong journey for a long time. It's been very good to me. I can truly say after 28 years, I still enjoy coming to work. And I look forward to it. So.
I think so. And the only other thing I'd add is I think it's very important to have a sense of humor, no matter what you do.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Great. Thank you for this information.
All right.
Well, good. I